Hey, this is Megan from Swish and Flick. I wanted to tell you all about Book of the Month. I love the curated list of books that is available every month. It makes it so easy to find something for you. Book of the Month focuses on new and upcoming authors. It's really helped me to venture beyond my regular genres. I am so excited at the start of every month to see what Book of the Month has picked. And what's better than getting a cute blue box in the mail with a book in it? I was so excited to see this month The Paradise Problem by Christina Loren was a pick. You guys know how much I love their writing. I've already started it, and it's everything you could expect from a Christina Loren novel. Book of the Month is offering a great intro offer for the month of May. You get your first book for $5 with the code PETALS, P-E-T-A-L-S, and shipping is always free. Head on over to bookofthemonth.com and use code PETALS.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money at
Menards. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Tiffany here from Swish, and I want to talk about being a problem solver. In my classroom, I'm always telling my Ickle-firsties to be problem solvers. In first grade, that's one thing, but in adult life, it's a whole other. It can be really difficult to train your brain to go into a problem-solving mode. Maybe you don't even know where to start. It's a challenge that we all face in life. But when you learn to better help your brain find solutions, it's truly a great feeling. And if you've ever been thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. BetterHelp is convenient, it's accessible, it's affordable, and it's all online. And on top of that, they match you with a therapist just by filling out a brief survey. So when you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/swish today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/swish.
Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick. Everyone? Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 114 of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
I'm Katie.
And I'm the best one on the podcast, Sarah.
And that's probably pretty accurate, actually. Yeah. So today we will be discussing how our lovely author and queen, J.K. Rowling, uses colors, numbers, and draws inspiration from mythology, and how the names of spells were created. And we are actually live from the Seaport Ballroom in Boston at LeakyCon 10.
Our first ever.
Yeah. First ever LeakyCon. It's LeakyCon 10.
Took us 10 years to get here.
It did. We didn't even know we needed it.
It's because they don't know we were walking. Took us 10 years to walk here.
I don't know what's going on. But, so we just want to introduce, because we do have some people in our audience this morning. Is it this morning? This afternoon. They don't know about us yet. So we're going to do a little
yourselves.
Bit about... Right.
Can I start it?
Yeah,
please.
Because
I kind of started it all. So it started, what, two and a half years ago. I wanted to... I asked Tiffany. Tiffany and I are... She's married to my brother, so she's my sister-in-law. And then I went to high school with Megan. And we all became really good friends because of Harry Potter. And I had asked a question to Tiffany, something about Draco and the wand or whatever. And... She was finishing a reread, and she goes, well, let's... I'm like, well, I hadn't reread the books in a long time. I'm like, let's start a reread. And she's like, let me finish Deathly Hallows first, and then we'll do it. And then that was April. May is Megan's birthday. So we went out to dinner, this Megan, Katie, and I, and then her roommate, Chris, who the poor guy had to listen to us talk about Harry Potter the entire time while he sat and ate crepes. He's like, cool, I don't know what you're talking about.
I really did feel bad. He just had no clue what he was getting into.
Literally, I would say we were talking for 2.5 hours straight about Harry Potter. So then we decided we were going to do a reread. And then in June, it was the 20th. Was it it was the 20th anniversary. It was when the books came out.
Yeah.
We had a feast. We read the first two books and we talked about them, and we talked about the first book for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I just threw out, let's start a podcast. And literally the next month, our first episode was out.
Yeah. It was actually very too much. Fast. And if it sounds like it happened really fast, it's literally, it happened so incredibly fast. I think it was like within the next like week or two.
We had bought.
Things were ordered. Mics were ordered. Yeah. Mixer was ordered. We were like, all right, where are we doing this? And luckily enough, I had a couple of friends that were podcasting already. So I was like, hey, what do I do? How do I do this? And then we are blessed enough to have Megan and Katie be the amazing graphic designers that they are. And tech nerds that they are. Yeah. So all of the designs that you see that are Swish and Flick are made and created by them, these two in the middle, who are lovely and married to one another. Yeah. Isn't that cute?
And honestly, it saves us a ton of money.
It really does.
Which is
great. When am I going to get paid for this?
So yeah, Swish Swag is really pretty cool. I mean, look at that. Isn't that great?
Talent's good.
And we have buttons in here and magnets and stickers and
please,
stuff.
After.
And afterwards, come up and you can pick from our swag bag. And
And that was two and a half years ago. Our first episode went live on Harry Potter's birthday.
And I will say, when inevitably you take your phone out and you do subscribe to us, because I know you're going to want to. those first couple of episodes, you know, we're just learning. So if our levels sound crazy and we sound a little, you know.
It's rough. It's because we are.
It's because we are.
Never, I mean, podcasted before. But
And we're rereading the series. But realistically, we just happen to be talking about it with a microphone in front of our faces. So the way that we do it is how we have a conversation. You know,
it's very casual.
It's casual. We laugh a lot. We're not crazy serious because realistically we aren't. We are serious people, but in this kind of, it's kind of like an escape for us from, you know, all the negatives of daily life living, you know? So it's just a lot of fun. And honestly, we don't let a lot of negativity into our space and any of our, like online communities, which is great. Because
that's, I think,
we don't want to deal with it.
That's like the best thing that's come out of this podcast is our communities that we've built on Facebook mostly. We've got a really awesome group and like a support group that has helped a ton of people. And that's probably what I'm most proud of, I think, from the pod. So, all right.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we all know each other. So as we started our podcast, it was within the first few chapter episodes that we noticed that there was an importance in numbers. Joe uses, I'm going to call her Joe because we're friends.
she stopped answering our phone calls a long time ago, but, you know.
She said, go do that podcast. So she uses numbers frequently, and they often have very important meanings. She doesn't just throw out the number 3 or the number 7 or the number 12 or 13 casually. If we know anything about our author, we know that she has purpose behind all of these things. So during our episodes, if you're new to the podcast, we started being like, we should like, I don't know how we said it, but like identify, you know, when she uses these numbers and when she uses these colors and things. And so we do a bell for numbers and colors. It's literally one of those bells you'll find on like a store counter if they say like ring, you know, and someone will come to the front. So Katie usually is in charge of the bell, but lately we've been fighting over it. But whoever can get to it first.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's two because we both hit one.
How many bells do we have in the basement?
3.
No, we have more than that.
There's like 6.
Yeah. Because we must be hoarders because we haven't gotten rid of the ones that don't. I mean,
there are
still
some
work,
that don't work.
But they claim that they're like, it doesn't work.
It's a bad
bell. Then someone else will use it and it works perfectly fine.
So we have debates over if it's user error or if it's the bell.
Yeah.
I always think it's the bell because I wouldn't make a mistake like that.
So, numbers. So, what we're going to do today during this episode is we're going to just explore a little bit further about what are the meanings behind the numbers and the colors and the names for spells and the mythological creatures that we find within the series. So, first up is the number 3. And the number 3 is used so much in the series. For example, the trio, right? 3. And they're essential characters within the series, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and all are stronger together
And their bond really, they have their rifts, but their bond is never broken completely. Like, even though Ron does leave in 7, their bond, he is never forgotten. He never truly leaves them. You know what I mean? He physically does, but he never leaves, leaves them.
Yeah, I think most of that was, like, the Horcrux bringing out his insecurities. Absolutely. And thinking he's not good enough to be around them, and he's not good enough specifically for Hermione and...
Oh, one.
And all of those things. So, like, the second he gets the Horcrux off of him, like, the necklace,
he wanted
and
to
he goes
back.
Through the wards, he literally is like, oh, shoot, like, what did I do? I need to go back.
Yeah, absolutely. Rowling also has the 3 Deathly Hallows, the cloak, the stone, and the wand. And when united, they make one the Master of Death. So, once again, stronger together. So... I also pulled, it says, the archetype of the Trinity appears numerous times throughout the Potter series, and at its heart, the series essentially focuses on a triad of Trinities, the trio, the Unforgivable Curses, and the Deathly Hallows. So if you think about it, sometimes you're like, oh yeah, there are 3 of those. Oh, there are 3 of those. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it says an intersection of this triad is called like a super Trinity. And I just, like, a super Trinity. Think about all those things together, how powerful all of those forces are, how powerful all of the Deathly Hallows are. And unfortunately, the Unforgivable Curses and the trio together are exceptionally powerful forces. I just really like that. So we, our listeners have named themselves Swishers. And so one of our Swishers, and I don't know if I told you all I added this in, you may have seen it when you were doing your own notes, but Vinny... is one of our listeners, and he's a patron of our podcast, and he's always coming up with wonderful things. And so I reached out to him, and I said, Vinny, I go, I want to give you some credit for the work that you've done and the study that you've done. I was like, do you want to maybe tell me your thoughts on numbers? So he brought up some references to the number 3 throughout the series, and connections with things maybe that are biblical or in our other world. So, the Peveril brothers, and he also drew a comparison to the 3 wise men from the Bible. The Golden Trio, as referenced, is a comparison to the Holy Trinity.
I literally can't wait to talk about that in depth, because we were doing an episode, and we have a Discord channel while we record, and he was in there, and he started like...
Just honestly, like information.
I don't know how it came about, but he started throwing all these references about... the Bible and comparing it to Harry Potter, like the trio as the Holy Trinity and Snape as
Judas.
Judas,
yeah.
And like comparing all the characters to all these people and stories that we know, that the 4 of us know as Christians. And like, it literally blew my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, sidetrack, but literally we are going to talk about
that's gonna be a fun episode
at one point, and I cannot wait. That was the best thing. Oh my God, it was so great.
Literally yelling.
it was great.
Some other comparisons with the number 3. So the 3 gifts given to Jesus at his birth by the 3 wise men, paralleled by Voldemort's 3 gifts given to him during the resurrection potion. And it's also
so crazy.
It says the resurrection in the Bible happened 3 days after the crucifixion. Harry uses the 3 gifts to embrace death and to be able to survive it. So the Deathly Hallows. And he says the Hallows are like ingredients of the potion to resurrect Voldemort. The bones of the father are like the cloak, which was given to Harry by his father. The Elder Wand, which was Harry's ultimate tool from Voldemort in their last duel, because he was hiding under it, and he like popped out, and he's like, "Oh hey, here we go."
Did he say that?
He could have.
He was like, "Hey Tom."
He did call him Tom a lot, which was like,
"Hey,
let's finish this the way we started in like the worst scene of the movie."
Oh,
can't stand that scene.
That's for another podcast.
I know. I just had to say it.
It's all right. So, where am I at? Oh, the blood of the enemy, which is taken from Harry by Wormtail. The flesh of the servant is like the resurrection stone given to Harry by Dumbledore. There is also the parallel that Wormtail and Dumbledore both lost the same hand.
Ooh.
I never thought of that. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not cool because that sucks, but it's cool comparison.
I mean, Wormtail did that to him. Well, I guess they both did it to themselves, actually.
Yeah, but I don't feel bad for Wormtail is the difference.
True is
I mean,
true.
Yeah.
Sarah, what did you say? His hand got sick.
His hand got sick, yeah.
Dumbledore's hand got sick.
In the beginning of Goblet of Fire, Voldemort literally tells Wormtail that people would give their... Is it his right? Whatever hand it is, he literally says, he's like, I have a lot of followers that would give their right hand to do what you're doing, and he literally does.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, cool. I mean, not cool.
So let's move on to the number 7. So 7 is supposed to be the most magically powerful number, right? And if you go to what... once was Pottermore, now is wizardingworld.com. There's actually a whole infographic about the number 7. So that lets you know, like, these numbers are super important within the series if they're going to go out of their way to make an infographic about the number 7. So let's just go through these. 7 books in the series, 7 galleons for Harry's wand.
I really want to ding a bell, and it's bothering me that I'm not hearing it.
It would be just so crazy. Ding, ding, ding. 7 Weasleys, 7 floors at Hogwarts, 7 players in Quidditch, 7 obstacles guarding the Philosopher's Stone. Slytherin wins the house championship 7 years in a row.
Until they don't anymore.
And then Harry Potter ruins everything.
Yes! 7 hidden passageways, 7 keyholes in Moody's trunk, 7 sickles for the price of Fred and George's canary creams, 7 socks owned by Dobby, 7 years old was the age that unicorns turn pure white, because aren't they born gold?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Okay. The 7th level in the Ministry of Magic is for the Magical Games Department. 7th year at Hogwarts, Lily and James became an item. Don't. 7 owls for Harry and Ron from their exams. 7 questions Bellatrix poses to Severus in Spinner's End. So that first chapter in Deathly Hallows. No, second chapter.
Second chapter.
7 Horcruxes containing fragments of Voldemort's soul. And he also asks Slughorn, well, isn't 7 the most magically powerful number? And Slughorn's like, 7? What? It's a crazy.
Merlin's
beard, Tom. 7 people disguised as Harry flying through the sky. 7 is the age by which experts agree magic will have revealed itself. 7 hours Harry spends surveillancing the ministry's entrance in 7. 7 defense against the dark arts teachers in the series. RIP, pour them out for some. And it just says at the bottom, 7 is the most magically powerful number. It is used a total of 159 times within the series.
Not 157?
No.
She's not that clever.
That would be too magical. That would be too magical.
The world would implode. Magic would be everywhere.
And that's
awesome.
I don't know. It could be dangerous.
If you go to the lexicon, there's actually a bunch of quotes pulled from the series with the number 7 within them. Like, I'm not going to read all of these to you, but Hagrid says, 7 years there and he won't know himself. Vault 713, right? Yep. That combines two of our magical numbers.
Yep.
7 sickles to the galleon, I think we already said. But there's just a ton of other quotes that is pulled from the series. And I just really, really enjoy that. And when we post these episodes, our links to our websites go in the notes. So you can also look at these articles yourself. So here we go. Number 12. I'm trying to go fast because I feel like I'm a little long-winded in my section today.
We are not used to podcasting for an hour.
No, we got to push it.
I'm adding more things to my notes. I'm like, we have an hour.
I know.
Our pods are usually like an hour and a half to 2 to sometimes 2.5.
We've done 3 hours before.
It's been a lot. Yeah.
That's on like super important chapters, but...
Even every time we'll have a short one, we're like, oh, it's short. We won't talk that long. And it turns into 2 hours of us talking about relevant information.
You'll have plenty of content. So the number 12. So there are 12 known subjects offered at Hogwarts. Number 12, Grimmauld Place. Dumbledore discovers the 12 uses of dragon's blood, which I wish I knew what they were.
Shout out to Yumbledore in here today. Right?
Yeah.
Hey, stop! You look real good.
You look awesome. Yeah.
All right, all right, all right. This is a runway for you when we're finished, okay? there are 12 Christmas trees that decorate the Great Hall. I wish I could be there at Christmas. This one I found super interesting. At the Battle of the Department of Mysteries, there were 12 on each side. Oh, six ooh. Students and six from the Order, and then 12 Death Eaters.
That's cool.
Isn't it,
I did
it,
not
though?
Know that one. Know that
You're either. Welcome.
You're welcome.
13 within the Wizarding World. So this first one's a little meh. Lord Voldemort's wand is 13 and a half inches, so kind of 13, right? Peter Pettigrew murdered 12 people after betraying Lily and James, as well as faking his own death. As a result, Sirius was wrongly convicted in the murder of 13 people. But Pettigrew later claimed his 13th victim with Cedric Diggory.
Oh. Mm.
Right? Because 12 plus 1 equals 13.
I just really yeah. is dislike not spare, him. Okay?
Yeah.
Shout out to Hufflepuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Pour one out for Cedric.
Pour it out.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to pour.
I'll just take a sip of water.
Okay. Sips for sadness. That's, yeah.
Yes. That's what we do when we don't pour things out, because I don't know if I believe in pouring alcohol out. Unless it's bad, but even
what
still.
About if you if what about it makes it into your mouth?
Yeah, what? That's good.
Like you pour it, you don't waste it, you drink it.
True.
Yeah, that's a sip for sadness.
Oh,
anyways,
I'm sorry.
13. The number 13.
Okay. So this one's got a little bit of a backstory here. Okay. So on Christmas Day, 1993, Sybil Trelawney, professor of divination at Hogwarts, joins several of her pupils and fellow teachers for Christmas dinner in the Great Hall. She's fearful upon noticing that 12 people were dining in the hall, believing that were she to sit down, the first of the 13 seated would rise, would be the first to die, right? So fellow professor Minerva McGonagall expressed doubts whether her fears are legitimate or not. Mm. However, if Peter Pettigrew in his Scabbers disguise is counted as the person, there were 13 people seated before Trelawney arrived. Since then, Dumbledore rose mm-hmm. from his seat to greet Professor Trelawney, assuming that this student, Derek, and two other unnamed students did not die before Dumbledore's death in 1997. Professor Trelawney's prediction was indeed correct.
Well, and I feel like you would have known if any students died at Hogwarts. Some sure. unnamed student died. We don't really care about him because it's not really important. You know what I mean? You would have been told. Like,
could have been.
I agree. We probably would have
We're
known.
Just covering bases here.
Yeah.
In 1995, 13 members of the Order of the Phoenix dined together, and the first to rise was Sirius, and Sirius was the first to die of those 13 Ugh. People.
So sad.
That's yep. so sad.
I still can't, man. I still can't.
Sorry. Barty Crouch Jr.'s escape from Azkaban in prison in 1982 was not known publicly until 1995, which was 13 years later. Oh. Oh. Lord Voldemort spent 13 years of his life without a body, and the Death Eaters had not met in his presence for 13 years before they did so in the Little Hangleton graveyard on the 24th of June, 1995.
My body's gone.
So not a good comparison. Go ahead.
So I just want to point out that basically everything that you have said up to this point about 13 is very grave. Sevens oh. are not so much. Like, when you're reading the sevens, yeah. that's a lot of good things,
Happy
obviously.
Magical number.
Yeah, but everything you've mentioned 13 revolves around death or, that's you know, point. Barty Crouch Jr. escaping prison is obviously not a good thing. It's around Lord Voldemort. He spent 13 years without his body. The Death Eaters hadn't met in his presence in 13 years. It's just...
It's all connected to, like, death and stuff, you know?
Death and stuff.
Death and sadness.
Yeah.
Too yeah.
true. Too true.
No, yeah.
So...
13 people came to collect Harry from number 4 Privet Drive for the last time in 1997. It's possible that this contributed to the bad luck experienced by these witches and wizards in this operation, the Battle of the Seven Potters.
I'm just saying, yeah, that's bad. Oh.
Thought you wanted to hold my hand. All right. one of the 13, Alistair Moody, unfortunately dies that day. This one. And Katie, I apologize in advance.
I know, I'm bracing myself.
Okay. After Alistair Moody's death, 13 people sat in the living room of the Weasleys. The first person to stand up Remus Lupin.
Why'd you do it?
Was the first to die.
Why'd he stand?
He's not dead. I don't know where that paragraph came from.
But he is.
It didn't happen.
Sorry. Sorry.
Did you have something you wanted to say? Ooh. Oh, that would be interesting, but I have the
Kindle app. I'm going to look that up for you right now.
And I'll start colors.
You go.
Okay, I will go.
Go.
So the next big connections that she makes is she always uses colors to show colors have so many different meanings, whether they're positive or they're negative, and colors can have both associated to them. Like yellow has good and bad associated to it, and so on and so forth. So, and the other interesting thing about colors is that they can change their meaning over time with fashion or social awareness, familiarity. For example, like green, a long time ago used to be considered an unlucky color because it was always associated with poisons or mm-hmm. bad things. However, since like environmental awareness has come around, it has shifted to mean good things like, go Earth. Yeah.
Well, they used to put poisons, like that's how they got a green color. But also, like we always talk, because we're big Disney fans, specifically these two, There's a whole saying like evil, like every villain is lime. Like you see a lot of lime green in
Maleficent.
Disney films. And
Scar, when he's singing Be Prepared, is surrounded by green.
So it's like associated. And we just, we went to Salem on Friday and they were talking about The Wizard of Oz and how when it was like the first movie in Technicolor and they, in the book, she's not, the Wicked Witch of the East is not green, but they really wanted to make her look evil. And really, they now had the technology to have you see the green color, so that's why they did it. They made it to make her look more evil. So then you associate it.
They also did green because of paganism. Just repeating, because I don't think
for the pod,
just to pick you.
Very cool. It's fascinating. And so then you have all these connotations of, green, it's associated
green
with all of these things.
And,
yeah.
So Pottermore/WizardingWorld.com had a great article that came out where they talked about the significance of colors specifically in Harry Potter. So whether it's talking about your magical identity, demonstrating what your house is because the house colors are so prominent, or just, wondering what the most appropriate shade for a wedding is. I think that comes in with Fleur and Bill.
Uh-huh.
There's no denying colors are important. Mm-hmm. So the first one is red. So along with gold, red is one of the colors of Gryffindor. Both were chosen because of their connection to Gryffindor's element, which is fire. And it's also connected to Hagrid, whose first name is Rubius, which coming from Latin, rubio means red. J.K. Rowling explains that the name is a deliberate nod to the alchemical, like alchemy, but that was probably butchered.
Something that Nicholas Flamel did.
Yeah.
They all know.
Yeah.
So the process associated with transformation, so with the red being an essential mystical component. Hagrid is passionate, warm, and having been sorted into Gryffindor, red through and through. Which I thought is great. Like, who would think Rubius Hagrid is a connection to the color red, but it is.
Well, he's the best person ever, so, yeah.
He is. That's Sarah's favorite, in case you didn't catch on to that. But outside of the Wizarding World, red also means energy, passion, action. And its association with Gryffindor, where dwell the brave at heart, is particularly apt. It fits it very well.
It makes me think of Aries. I'm an Aries, and I'm not a Gryffindor, but it makes me think they have similar traits of being, like, fiery, you know?
Yeah.
It's a fire sign, so.
I am actually an Aries and a Gryffindor.
You're so
How
cool.
How perfect.
I am a fiery creature.
Yeah. Another cool fact about red is that it's one of the oldest color names. It's the first color to be seen in the rainbow. This is just, like, boosting her ego. And has...
right here.
The greatest.
Color has royalty, so ha.
That's fine.
We fight about this later. Let's fight about it later. And it has the greatest emotional impact of all. So the positive connotations with red are love, luck, passion, importance, which I bolded in my notes because I think that it's important that Jo chose red for Gryffindor because it was in the books the most important house because everything revolved around it. And negative things were war, danger, the devil, which in Potter, I don't think we really touch on that too much. She mostly focuses on the positive connotations of it, but just to throw that out there. Next is white. So white is like the ultimate in lightness, and I think that that's why she uses white with Albus Dumbledore a lot.
Doesn't his name mean white? Like bright white?
Yes. It does.
The best.
So the counterpoint to Hagrid is Dumbledore, whose first name, Albus, means white. Hagrid's associated with emotion, and Dumbledore represents calm. Mm. So they're almost like polar opposites.
Like in the Goblet of Fire movie?
Yes.
I love just Michael Gambon. Don't get me wrong.
My point is,
different interpretations
like
of calm.
I like to think that is in there so the people that have not read the stories and don't know the importance of like how terrified they are and how worried they are for Harry. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a big deal for a kid to be doing that, truth, in my opinion. Did I love it? No, but just.
So, you know, white also has to do with like spirituality and, it's about striving for brilliance by detaching yourself from the world, which again is what Dumbledore does a really good job of. And color psychology specifies that white is the color of purity and innocence. I don't think that matches Dumbledore very well, but we doubt Dumbledore would lay claim to either. But it's certainly a calming color and a natural balance to the passionate earthiness of red.
Very cool.
Then the best color, which is green. So it's associated with Slytherin. So it is also unfortunately associated with dark magic. And jealousy. And Harry has green eyes, which is, so I don't know where I was going
with
that.
Maybe there's the Voldemort in him. I don't know. He deals with
He grapples with the dark side.
Yeah.
He toes that line.
Yeah, but Lily didn't, and it was her eyes, so why?
Yeah, but she seems like a little mischievous, you know?
She is very fiery, I know that.
She's an ambitious kind of gal, an ambitious kind of gal.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like good versus evil.
And, you know, everyone has light and dark inside. It's just what you choose to do.
Ooh, thank you, Sirius. Jinx, also, you owe me a Coke.
No. Also, I think like the standard like witch look is that red hair, green eyes. I think that's just like what you
see that a lot.
I can see that. So like Gryffindor's colors, green and silver of Slytherin are connected to Slytherin's element, which is water. And in folklore, green has long had supernatural connection, like we were talking to with earlier about like the Wizard of Oz and witches. It's very associated to witches. Mm-hmm. And J.K. Rowling explained that the color is said to belong to fairies, and it has an association with misfortune and death. So consequently, green should never be worn at weddings, which I think is interesting.
Tinkerbell wear a green dress?
She does.
She's a fairy, right?
She is.
Okay. Well, just thoughts to think.
Yep.
Also, wear whatever you want to a wedding, unless it's white, unless you're the bride.
So there are also positive connotations with green, which include energy and rebirth. So in the wizarding world, Jo tells us that it's used to reveal magical status to other wizards, and often in combination with the color purple. So like some of the students at Slytherin House, the theory behind the color is somewhat slippery. So there's a lot of good and bad with it, even though it's associated a lot with bad in the books. There's still...
But do you... Like, McGonagall is often wearing emerald green robes.
She is, and...
Do you have something on this?
No... I'm sorry, I don't. But I just wanted say the positive things. Like, yes, there's like growth and rebirth, like I said, but also freshness, youth, health, peace, calm, growth, renewal, all of those kinds of things. Which I think that like, I think that that fits McGonagall. I mean, she's not youthful, but she.
Just because
we don't even know how
you aren't youthful. I'm just saying you can have a youthful spirit.
That's me.
I'm just being a devil's advocate. Just because she could be 90 with a youthful spirit. I met a lot of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I like that a lot.
It always reminds me of like the Scottish Highlands. Like she's just in green.
So what our listener said was that McGonagall wearing green was like a nod to her Irish heritage.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So that's pretty cool. I also wonder, like, I wonder what her, do you think her second house would have been Slytherin? She seems like that could maybe fit her.
What, she was a headstall between Ravenclaw and Gryffindor, correct?
Was she?
Yes. Yeah.
Darn.
She's one of the only true headstalls.
She just seems like she also could fit into Slytherin too. But I guess we all have traits within us.
We can make a case for every person almost in any house. We've had this discussion.
That's true.
You know, I mean, I could kind of see it, but she's very intelligent and witty, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Hold on, okay. She's got a question.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's important to note that Lily's eyes are green and Severus Snape's house is Slytherin. And they have that mm-hmm. connection in the mm-hmm. books. And I'm going to try and go through these quickly. Mm-hmm. But purple is the next, which has the positive traits of purple are bravery. What is that? Aristocracy. Thank you, educator. I appreciate it. But like, I associate that with like royalty too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Spirituality, mystery, luxury. Mm. And the negatives are conceit, mourning, death, and rage.
Death for purple?
Whoa. I know. That was surprised me.
Was that?
It was in. So Tiffany's friend had given us these books because she's an art teacher, and it laid out all of these like positive, negative connotations of colors, and it was in the book about colors, mm-hmm. and yeah, it said death.
I wonder
purple.
Sometimes like if you have a dead body and like say they've been bruised, it's a purple, be purpling. I don't know, just things. I'm just saying, it just that's not great.
I'm gonna say purple's great because it's a swish color, so
great.
It's also associated to like religion though mm-hmm. as well. And it's tied to imagination. In the Wizarding World, Jo has identified purple as a color associated with nobility, helpful magic, which is why Dumbledore is represented by the color on Pottermore, like his illustrations and everything. Like he's wearing purple robes quite a few times throughout the books, which I think kind of shows us his status mm-hmm. in the books. And then we have blue, and I thought that Sarah would appreciate that blue is associated with being the best.
Holla. That's because I am the best. And I also look phenomenal in blue, just saying. I also look great in red, but.
Blue, so royalty, again, for blue, the best. Heaven, coolness, truth,
I am
loyalty.
Super cool.
You're super cool. And then the negativity is introversion, sadness, depression, coldness. So it's like very...
Two opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah,
I agree. And it also matches Ravenclaw's element, which is air. So... thank you.
The door's over there.
like I said, in psychology, blue means trust, loyalty... which actually kind of sounds similar to Hufflepuff traits, which I find to be funny because Sarah is very adamant on her second house being Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think that it is, but she thinks that it is. But
okay.
This is an ongoing conversation. She is loyal, though. I mean, I'm not saying she's not loyal.
What's happening?
I love you. and it also is equated to a higher level of intelligence. So that sounds very Ravenclaw, in my opinion. It matches the house very well. Yellow can often be used as a warning sign, but its positive connotations are truth, loyalty, cheerfulness, happiness, hope, warmth, which literally, if you go on Pottermore and type Hufflepuff, the picture, like, just emanates all of those things of like the common room. It's like the brick walls with the circle windows and the sunlight coming in. Yeah. It just feels cozy and warm and happy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. And then lastly, we have pink, which I thought was an interesting one that they include, but there are many shades of pink in Harry's world, just as there are many types of people. So from the shocking pink of Tonks' hair, which is a positive thing, we also go to Dudley. Mm. Porky Dudley and the salmon shades associated with Aunt Petunia. She always uses like pinks and reds when she's talking about them. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we have Professor Umbridge. So it's like opposite ends of the spectrum with pink. For Umbridge, pink is an affection as false as her laugh and her kittens. So it's very, it's like a... What's the word I'm looking for? It's just like a...
I think it's a facade.
Yep, that's it. Nice. Thank you. It's a facade. Yeah. So she's like trying to portray herself as this, oh, look at me. I'm all kittens.
Especially with her voice.
And you know,
the more evil she gets, the more sweet her voice gets. Yeah. Yes. Like, and
it's almost like that phrase, kill them with kindness.
Yeah. Kind she's of literally thing, trying so to kill like, you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't stand that cats are associated with her. Because yeah. I love cats, and I was like, why are they all over her office? Because
she likes
them. Not fair, no. Can we go back to Tonks for a second?
Yes.
Tonks' hair changes back to that bubblegum pink when she is feeling at her most best, because we do know that when she and Lupin go through their little thing where they're, you know, they want to be together, but, you know, he's being Lupin, and, you know, he's like all down on himself and everything. Her hair turns to the mousy brown.
Yeah.
So it does reflect her good, positive feelings.
Yeah.
I like that.
I wonder if she can actually, I know she can control it, but I wonder if her emotion is connected to her hair color change. Like if she starts, like say he's like, yes, let's be together. If her hair is just like, boom, we're going pink again.
I bet it's fast.
I would hope so.
Because I think like for her, that's just her personality too. It's like very... She's bubbly.
Yeah. Like it just happens naturally. She doesn't have to be like, all right, my hair's pink now. It just like naturally happens that way.
Yeah.
All right. Am I up?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try and fly through this a little bit. So
Sarah, you want to do this 2000 or a Firebolt? Firebolt.
Yes. So the Harry Potter books are loaded with Latin, and it all starts with Hogwarts motto, which I'm not going to try and say it in Latin. I'm just going to say never tickle a sleeping dragon. So Latin is the language of mysticism, alchemy, secrecy, and legend. It's also the language of magic. And we could dive into so many comparisons here. She uses it for locations. She uses it for names, but we're going to focus on spells. Mm. Some translate pretty directly, like almost perfect, and then others are kind of crafted with little fragments. So I'm just going to go through a few, and some of them like you might know, but some I didn't even know, so here we go. So Accio, one of those literal ones, it means I summon. Hey,
come on over.
There's finite and cantatum. So finite is made up of finis or ad finem, which means to end. And incantum comes from incanto, which means bewitching. So put the two together, it literally means to end bewitching. Ooh, so like stop the spell.
That's cool.
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Priori and cantatum. A priori means from the earlier. So that means to...
Previous.
Yeah, bring from before. Expelliarmus sounds pretty, you get it. Expello means I banish, and arma means weapons. So it literally means to steal your weapon.
Yes.
Lumos literally means light. Nuff said. Nox means night. Again, nuff said. Expecto patronum. I like this one. So Latin patronus literally means a protector or an influential person. Expecto means I look or I wait. So it translates to I wait for a protector. I found another source that in ancient Rome, a patronus meant a protector, but in a different way. So that was someone of a high class or a patronage who had their relationship with a client who usually was less rich or lower class. So patron most likely came from the term pater, which means father in Latin. And what I like about that is Harry's patronus is his father. Yeah.
I like that a lot. It's a good correlation.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That's part of my claw coming in. Obliviate comes from I'm not going to say it, but it means I forget.
Wait, sense. What? I forget what you just said.
Obliviscore? Obliviscore. I don't know.
Obliviscore?
I don't know.
Sure.
Petrificus totalis. That's a mix of three words. Where's my bell? So petros means rock or stone in Greek. Fascio means to make up, make or to do. And totalis means whole. So you become a whole rock. Ridiculous is one of my favorites, not just because it's Remus Lupin and he's my man. So it does sound a lot like the English word ridiculous. Did I say that right? Did I say the spell? I don't know. It can also be derived from the Latin word ridiculum. There we go. Which means laughable. So I like that because how do you defeat a boggart? With laughter, not just the magic. Stupefy is to be stunned. It's stupio from Latin. So let's get a little bit darker. We've got sectum sempra, which is two words. So sectum is secco, meaning severed, and sempra is means continuously. Oh. So this literally means like to continuously slash
be like
you.
Slash, yeah.
That's pretty accurate to what it looks like.
Do you think that Drago has scars from that?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I bet.
It's because it's dark magic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like traces. Harry always has the scar on his hand from Umbridge, you know?
And his hand.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that one too. I guess that's more important than his hand.
Do you think Harry's kids were ever like, yeah, Dad, you must never tell lies. It's written on your hand. Do you think they've ever used that against him?
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. We have imperio, which the root is imper, and that's seen in other Latin words like impero, and that means I command. And that makes you do things. Mm-hmm. Crucio literally means I torture. That's exactly what that does. Avada Kedavra, according to J.K. Rowling, its roots are Aramaic, and it derives from the original abracadabra, how classic, which means let the thing be destroyed. And I have to round off the spells with Wingardium Leviosa because swish and flick.
Right.
So wing, obviously, it's not Latin, but it gives you the imagery of like flight or levitation. Ard is from Latin artis, and that means to be elevated. And then levy means to lift. Swish and flick, Wingardium Leviosa. So one last cool thing. As I said earlier, Latin is a language of magic, but some of Joe's spells, actually only two, are derived from Greek. There's only two mentioned in all of the seven books. That's anapneo, which clears your airway, and episkie, which is like for minor broken bones. And those are both Greek because Greek is the language of physicians and they're used for medicine.
That is so cool, Katie. Yeah.
I thought that was neat.
That is super neat.
Before Sarah starts her portion, I wanted to answer your question. So I'm not sure. So you can make of this what you will, but I'm going to read just a little bit to you. It says, "Good luck, everyone," shouted Moody. "See you all in about an hour at the Burrow. On the count of three. One, two, three."
I bet you he was the first to go.
I bet he was, too. Yeah. So
my mind is blown.
Good job.
Shnikes. Woo.
All right, Sarah. It's all you.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about mythology, and we don't have a crazy amount of time, so I'm just going to...
You got this.
Go, go, go.
I went to go push my glasses up, and they're not on my face. So Jo uses sources from history and mythology in her writing, and we see... This is, like, one that I have known for a long time with in Sorcerer's Stone. We see that Hagrid... in the movie, it's different. I forget who he got it from in the movie, but in the books, he gets the three-headed dog Fluffy from a Greek fella he met down at the pub.
Saw his face.
And in Greek mythology, you have Cerberus, who is a three-headed dog that guards the entrance to the underworld. And, you know, they're both guarding entrances. You see that they... Fluffy is on top of the trapdoor, and... they're both lulled with music, although Fluffy actually falls asleep. Cerberus, I think, just like has his like mouth hanging open. and I just thought that was really cool. And we've talked about that on our podcast as well, the nods to that. And then another little small nod, it was Percy. He gets a new owl, and I think it's, is it two? Is it Chamber of Secrets when he gets his owl?
Whenever he becomes prefect.
I think it's two.
Yeah, I think that's two. Yeah.
But he gets an owl. His name is Hermes, and in Greek mythology, Hermes is a god. He's primarily known as like the herald or the messenger of the gods, but he's also the god of shepherds, land travel, and literature. More specifically, he was known as a patron of poetry, which I just think is really cool. She just plucks little things. And another one, and I remember we had talked about Professor Trelawney and doing a nod to in Greek mythology, there's Cassandra Trelawney. And
right.
I don't think on the original Pottermore site that it said that she was related to her. I think that was just speculation. But now on
WizardingWorld.com.
On the WizardingWorld.com, it has like her article. It's just called Sybil Trelawney. And the very first sentence is, Sybil is the great-great-granddaughter of a genuine seer, yeah. Cassandra Trelawney. And it says her gifts have been much diluted over ensuing generations, although she has inherited more than she knows.
Right.
And with that story in Greek mythology, it says, and she was one of the priestesses. Nope, that's not what that says. It says princesses of Troy. According to myth, she was astonishingly beautiful, and she was blessed with the gift of foreseeing the future. But her curse was that no one would believe her.
I love that.
Boom. I forget all of this.
Yeah. And it's a fact that weighed heavily on the destruction of Troy during the Trojan War. So that's so one thing cool. with our Professor Trelawney, you know, people don't believe her. And it's almost like every time we talk about her, and even on the sites, they're like, well, she doesn't really ever predict anything true except for, like, those few prophecies with Harry. But, like, she did know that Neville was going to, like, knock over the teacup and stuff. So, like, is she really, and people just don't believe her, and no one even in, like, Joe doesn't even give her credit for it. But it's, like, hard to think, like, oh, does she actually say things? Like, she just throws them out, and they're like, oh, it's just Professor Trelawney saying those things. Or is she just honest and no one believes her?
I thought you were going to say that she knew Neville went through puberty well.
No, he knocked over the teacup. And then cool. he knew something was going to happen to, was it Lavender's pet or something? I don't know.
Bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did know yeah. Hermione was going to leave.
So it's like, is she reading people or reading yeah. the future?
Right.
And when we talked about it on our podcast, I related it to that show Psych, where
yes.
you know, he portrayed himself as like a psychic, but he was just very good at reading a room and like seeing the people and like what their little mannerisms were and yeah. all the details and then saying it, which I mean that's pretty astonishing in and of itself. And another cool thing with Kappas, and we see Lupin teaches that to his students. And just with the fandom, it says Kappas are a species of magical scaled covered monkeys from Japan who possess magically increased strength, the focus of which is in the water. They keep in a depression in their skull. That's crazy. And they're from Japanese culture, and it says in the waters of Japan, there lurks a creature that is as mysterious as it is terrifying, the Kappa. This strange creature is thought to hold magical powers that can be used for both good and evil. Unfortunately, the Kappa prefers to use its gifts to play tricks on humans or lash out violently towards them. Though many refuse to believe in the existence of the Kappa, there are many sightings still today, especially in the countryside of Japan. In fact, locals still hang warning signs near bodies of water thought to be frequented by the Kappas.
Interesting.
And this another thing, it says the Kappa is a mythological monster said to inhabit ponds and rivers in Japan. And it says it's both, at least in this culture, it says appearance of both a humanoid and reptile are both extremely cunning. Has over 80 different names, and usually the most common one is a kawapa. I probably said that wrong, but it's just a cool little instance. And I didn't grab a ton of information on the line, just because you know, we don't have a ton of time, so there's much right. more to go, and we could honestly talk about this for hours.
And we probably will at some point.
Yeah, because there's even like just stuff with. We did a whole episode. We talked about basilisks and how really there's stuff in, you know, religious beliefs and all of that stuff, and it's a representation of good and evil, and it's really interesting how she pulls all these things. And there's a great book, and she did a whole thing, the history of Harry Potter. She had a big exhibit in England, and then they brought it to New York City, and we were able to see it. And so just to see a lot of historical things that she pulled her information from, and just even her own writings, and we got to read some of, like, we got to see her handwriting and read drafts that she didn't put into the books. And so that's a great, it's more a picture book if you want to get the book, but it was really cool to see, like, the historical yeah. things and the stuff that she got, paintings and all that stuff is all compiled in one book, so.
There was a lot of mythology in that exhibit.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I mean, it's, it's fascinating, and I know that I really enjoy reading mythology and like seeing where she gets stuff from. So I could talk for hours and hours about it, but. We wanted to open this up, and if you guys have any questions for us, if you have any questions about this one specifically or any Harry Potter related, whatever you want to ask us, you can go ahead and ask us.
Do you have a couple basically. Minutes left? Yeah. Yes.
Question or comment. Going back to Lily's green eyes, mm-hmm. she's also the subject of Snape's affection, and he's jealous of her the relationship with James and Lily, so it has the association with the green and jealousy.
Yeah, that's so, true.
So what our listener said, sorry, because they can't hear you, so now they will. what the listener said was that Lily's green eyes and that Snape is jealous of her relationship with James, thus connecting green and jealousy together, right? Because a lot of people always say I'm green with envy, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So like we're, like that in itself, I wonder how long that saying has been around.
Yeah.
It's from Othello?
Yeah, it's Iago says it.
Oh, Iago says it in Othello, the green-eyed monster. See, I'm learning things today. This is fantastic. Yes.
Yes.
Do you think that some of the Latin roots for the names were a little bit too obvious? Like Remus Lupin means wolf.
Literally like werewolf, like, McWerewolf, yeah.
With the dragon and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
She sort of put a lot of effort into a lot of the spells except like Reparo. But then sort of being really obvious with the connotations with the names.
So someone asked if they think that Jo was being too obvious with how she used Latin and spells. I will say that I think just as witches and wizards, those would just be, that just kind of feels like that would be the spell to me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
An old language.
Like it would just be like, it would just be like this.
But even but with names and stuff, like I think that.
Oh yeah. As far as names go.
I like part of me wants to be like, you know, as a kid reading it, like for the first time, like all of that went over my head. So maybe
Same.
She's thinking
correct.
Like yeah. as a young person who's not like dissecting it as we do. And maybe Tiffany will like, not, I wouldn't say get mad, but she'd be like, Sarah, you have to remember when I'm like talking about, I go deep into timelines and like, she'll say, you know, this happened on whatever date. And I go, actually, it was a Saturday. Like she, like that's how far I go into it. And she's like, she probably never thought that people would dissect it as much as we do. So maybe part of her was like, I wonder if anyone's going to get, I'm naming him Wolf Wolf. Like, I wonder if she calls him like little Wolf Wolf, like while she's writing about it. Like that's something like I think of, like, I don't know if she really was, cause kids, I mean, unless they really know, but what kid knows Latin really?
Right. Yeah. And
that's okay.
Okay. So as an educator, I really appreciate the fact that she added those in there because, as these started out as children's novels, we know as they continue on, they're not so child friendly. And I just can appreciate it so much because otherwise I don't think kids would go out and be like, oh, I wonder what that means. Because I encounter, in my work, a lot of students would be like, and they'll just straight up be like, I don't know what that word means. And I'll be like, let's go ahead and I'll pull my phone out and be like, let's look up what this means right now. And the kids will ask about that. So that opens up even more doors for them to explore language and where it comes from. And I appreciate it so much. It might be obvious for some, but like Sarah said, I was a kid when I read these, I fell for all her tricks. Yeah. I thought Snape was the worst. He was bad. He would never turn good. He killed Dumbledore. There couldn't be any other way. Like I fell for all her tricks and mind games because that's just the kind of reader I was. I felt like it makes the books so much better for me personally. But some people who were like, I remember when they were coming out and somebody was like, no, Snape is good. Dumbledore asked him to kill him. And I'm like, no. So I love what she does there with
no.
Did you have anything to add? We have very little time.
I was just going to say that at this age, I would say yes, she's too intentional.
Yeah.
But I think, like they're saying, as a child, it's almost like she was teasing us with these Easter eggs. Like, I dare you to look that up when you start reading this book and see if you can figure out what I'm going to tell you. Yeah. And I think that part of it was just almost a game. So because of that, she was writing towards 10 to 13 year olds, and how many kids would just know that. So, so I do think that it was more so like a little Easter egg that she was putting in there to see who's going to catch on to this. Who's going to understand this.
Imagine Hermione Granger being like, oh my God, his name is Remus. Oh, I got this.
Yeah, really. She seems the one to have been like, Wolf? Huh. Oh, it's interesting.
Well, she is the one who figured it out, isn't she?
She did. Yes.
But she had the decency not to say anything.
She's a good person.
It's not her story to tell.
That's right. Yes. So we want to thank you for joining us today. You can find us on all the social media platforms. You can go ahead and take your phones out right now if you'd like to. Go to your favorite podcasting site and go ahead and subscribe. No, just kidding. But really do it. I'm on Twitter at @TiffSwish_Flick. You can follow me there.
Katie and I are on Instagram and Twitter at the Petrus Family.
Well, that was us. So
that's two for one.
I'm on Instagram. If you want to follow my boring life, it's O'Malley. It's OHHHMalley.
Three H's. Ding. We also have a website, SwishFlickCast.
Dot com.
Well, yeah.
.net.
It's .com.
SwishFlickCast.net. It's .com.
This joke. Okay. Feel free to come say hi after if you see us walking around today. Come get your swag.
We have magnets. Please. We have stickers. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yes.
You know, we try to make it sound fun.
Thank you. I'm going to close out this episode real quick so you get to see this live for my Swishers who are here right now. So that concludes this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the muggles get you down. We did it, friends! Thank you, truly thank you. Have a great rest of your con and travel safe.
Hope you enjoyed us blabbing on.
Welcome. Yeah. Are my friends ready here?
I'm ready.
Are my friends in the audience ready here?
Okay, let's go.
Hello and welcome to episode... Nope. Are we labeling this one? Hey, restart.
Go ahead. I mean...
Come on in.
Just say it.
We'll do it. Okay. I didn't know we were numbering
this. If it's not, we'll just switch it around.
It's fine. Okay. So here we go.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.